It's not acceptable because our people that have come from torture and trauma countries, you know, the government officials have always been intimidating.
Australian military joins COVID-19 lockdown enforcement. It's Tuesday, August 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, new mask guidance in the U.S. as the Delta variant spreads. Felon voting restoration gains momentum in U.S. Star gymnast Simone Biles returning to competition. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Australian military began helping to enforce Australia's strictest COVID-19 lockdown on Monday as a surge in Delta variant cases in Sydney continued to cause problems. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
About 300 troops have been sent to Australia's largest city to help overstretched police monitor home quarantine for coronavirus patients and potentially set up roadblocks. The troops will help the police on a door-to-door search to check if people who've contracted COVID are isolating, Police Commissioner Mick Fuller told reporters during a press conference. Senior officials have said the soldiers won't be armed and don't have special enforcement authority, but will be assisting the police. However, councillors have said that the sight of the military in multicultural areas of Sydney could be distressing for some refugees and migrants. Carmen Lazar is a manager at the Assyrian Resource Centre in the Fairfield district of the city.
It's not acceptable because our people that have come from torture and trauma countries, you know, the government officials have always been intimidating, and especially the police. You know, having the military patrolling a large multicultural community in southwestern Sydney, I don't think it's ideal for these people because they have not committed any crime.
Sydney's lockdown is scheduled to end on August 28, but Delta variant infections continue to increase. The stay-at-home orders are the strictest imposed in Australia since the pandemic began. The orders also apply to regions to the north, south and west of Australia's most populous city. Monday, authorities announced 207 new infections in the past 24 hours. A record number of 117,000 COVID-19 tests were also carried out in the same period. A lockdown in southeast Queensland, including the state capital Brisbane, has been extended until Sunday as authorities try to contain a Delta outbreak. Queensland's Chief Health Officer Dr. Jeanette Young is pleading for residents to stay at home.
This outbreak, unfortunately, is escalating, but I am very confident that with the strategies we have in place in Queensland and with the cooperation of every single Queenslander, we will get through it. Don't leave home. We know that the Delta variant of the virus is totally unforgiving. It really and truly spreads so rapidly.
Australia has recorded about 34,000 coronavirus infections and 924 deaths since the pandemic began. Just 19% of the population have been fully vaccinated. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Be sure to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Death toll from floods in China rises to 302. Belarus athletes safe and secure in Tokyo as Poland and Czech offer visas. U.S. expands eligibility for Afghan refugee resettlement. Myanmar junta forms caretaker government. Min Aung Hlaing is prime minister. As Winter Olympics near, China ups intimidation of foreign media. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani on Monday blamed the American troops' speedy pullout for the worsening violence in Afghanistan and said that his administration would now focus on protecting provincial capitals and major urban areas in the face of the rapidly advancing Taliban. Officials in southern Afghanistan confirmed Sunday that an overnight rocket attack by Taliban insurgents damaged the runway at Kandahar Airport, forcing the suspension of all flights. From Pakistan, Ayaz Ghul updates International Edition Steve Miller on the latest for VOA.
Yeah, this was quite a significant blow to the operations that Afghan security forces have been conducting in southern Afghanistan against the Taliban, because this is the airport that was being used to fly combat aircraft. They were basically targeting Taliban positions. Now, with this airport almost dysfunctional, at least for a couple of days, obviously it has given the Taliban an upper hand. And what we have seen today after that attack, that Taliban were able to conduct sort of guerrilla attacks against Afghan security forces in and around the Kandahar city, which is the second largest city of Afghanistan. And at the same time, in the neighboring Lashkargah city, which is the capital of Helmand province, inside the city, a lot of fighting was going on since yesterday. And today we saw that Taliban still continued attacking Afghan security forces positions inside the city. So it's that attack was quite a significant blow to the government forces, and that's why we saw that there was no let up in fighting all day today.
So Ayaz, what is the larger impact of the runways being closed at Kandahar Airport? You mentioned that Afghan forces were using it as a staging ground to conduct airstrikes against Taliban forces, but with the airport more or less out of action for the immediate future, what are you seeing and hearing from your contacts as the likely impact that will have on fighting in the region?
Well, we obviously, as you know, the Afghan Air Force has been, playing a key role in helping the security forces on the ground to contain Taliban advances. We still saw that there were flights, there were fighter jets taking off from elsewhere in the country and going and targeting Taliban positions there. But, for how long the Afghan Air Force can sustain this kind of a pressure, continuous involvement in the fighting against the Taliban and attacking them is also a big question. There's a big question mark, because we know that for years, the Afghan Air Force was heavily relying on U.S. military air power, and their advisors and their support, their contractors were actually helping the Afghan government sustain their air force. Now, with this limited facility being extensively used, and, Taliban are now targeting these key facilities like the Kandahar airport, obviously it's going to put more pressure on the Afghan security forces.
Again, that was Ayaz Ghul speaking with International Edition Steve Miller on the latest in Afghanistan for VOA. Happening now in Asia, South Korea said on Monday no decision has been made on its joint military exercises with the U.S. Kim Yo-jung, the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, warned the South on Sunday that holding the exercises would undercut efforts to rebuild relations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the drive to restore voting rights in the U.S. for millions of convicted felons has gained momentum in recent years, creating large groups of new voters with the potential to influence the outcome of races in key states such as Florida, Iowa, and Kentucky. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports from Washington, D.C., one of just three places in the U.S. where currently serving felons can participate in the democratic process.
A familiar face in his neighborhood of Southeast Washington, D.C., Corey Knight spends his days helping former felons rebuild their lives. The first step in that process, making sure those felons never lose their say in society.
Again, it's a human right issue. We all are human beings.
In 2020, Washington, D.C. joined Vermont and Maine as the only places in the U.S. where felons currently serving time behind bars have the right to vote. Knight, who led the voting rights restoration effort, says it's particularly important for people of color.
So the power of vote, which we see is in numbers, right? And that's what intimidates people, right? Because of people of color. There's a whole lot of us incarcerated. And so one of us, if all of us get together and vote, it kind of intimidates people. So they're trying to close our mouth.
Opponents say currently serving felons have given up their say in how society runs.
Individuals who are convicted of serious crimes and who are serving time in prison have shown that they are not willing to abide by the rules and laws that we have set up as a society. So why would you give them the ability through voting to decide what those rules and regulations are, ones that they say they're not going to abide by?
Most opponents acknowledge felons should have their rights restored once they serve their sentences and pay back fines, the current process in 27 states. But the process was anything but simple in Florida, where only a small fraction of the 2 million former felons could determine what they owed so they could pay their fines in order to vote.
As offensive as it was to me what the state was trying to do in terms of restrict the right to vote, what troubled me even more was that the state was unable to provide former felons an accurate answer as to how much they actually owed in terms of these fines, fees, court costs, and restitution.
Sakatmi co-created Free Our Vote to provide felons with a database to learn how much they owed the state, providing 20,000 former felons with the ability to vote in the 2020 election in Florida. Back in D.C., Knight is working to restore rights in states with even bigger populations, New York and California.
We definitely want to assist in every way to make sure that we can help people of color have a voice.
In the past two decades, half of U.S. states have changed felon voting laws, but more than 5 million ex-felons are still barred nationwide from voting. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
And now for news on the Tokyo Games. Heartbreak for the U.S. women's soccer team. Team USA lost to Canada 1-0. The U.S. women will play for the bronze on Thursday. And on the diamond, Team USA fell to Japan in extra innings in the quarterfinals. Americans will still play in the semis. The U.S. women's basketball team continued its winning ways, defeating France 93-82 for their 52nd consecutive win in Olympic competition. The team advances to the quarterfinals. For more Olympic headlines, here's Steve Ross reporting from Tokyo for VOA.
Today, Tokyo confirming nearly 2,200 new COVID-19 cases. Three of Tokyo's neighboring prefectures included in a newly widened state of emergency in response to Japan's nationwide surge in infections. But the good news is the Olympic bubble for athletes and their delegations appears to be working. Of some 400,000 COVID-19 tests performed on the Olympics community, only 0.02% have been positive. Grabbing gymnastics fans' attention, star American gymnast Simone Biles will return to competition for the balance beam finals on Tuesday. This after withdrawing from events about a week ago for what was described as a mental health issue. Also capturing headlines, on Sunday, Belarusian sprinter Kristina Simonouskaya refused to get on a flight bound for Belarus and sought protection from Japanese police. She had been taken to the airport against her wishes by Belarusian Olympic team representatives. Today she visited Poland's embassy seeking asylum. Poland and the Czech Republic have reportedly offered her visas. IOC officials say that Simonouskaya is safe and secure. Just some of today's highlights. Indonesia upsets China 2-0 for gold in women's doubles badminton. Li Wenwen taking the gold in women's over 87 kilogram weightlifting, giving Team China its seventh weightlifting win at the Tokyo Games. Join us tomorrow from Tokyo for more Olympics highlights. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.